been so long, long hard days. They don't say God's changed my ways, changed my ways, those evil. So I set out across that way, strike them down to make them pay and change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this January 8th, 2019, Tuesday. So to clarify, and again, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth. I think the nuance that's missing in this context here is that what Paul is doing or attempting to do is to debunk the Bible through its own text, or to point out the fallacy or the flaws of the text by citing the text. And that's my, you know, I guess if we want to call it interpretation, I guess, or that's my reading of what he's doing. But again, I don't want to put words in his mouth, and there's nuance and there's, you know, subtext and things that are missed. And I don't want to get into that in his absence. Because I don't think that's. I think
okay,
you
well,
know. Quickly,
I'll
it gets
it
unfair.
That.
Right on.
I'll leave it at that, and I understand what you're saying. So I'll leave it at that. But to go back, okay, George Bernard Shaw. You know, you and I have had this conversation before. What has he ever produced? It's funny, Chris, that in so many instances, it boils down to. When they're saying, what do you produce to justify your existence? They're looking at either monetary, or they're looking at, you know, what are you doing for me? So I should say that you can live. Maybe we'll just euthanize you. And when it boils down to it, so many people, look at those that have been destroyed or killed or marginalized or locked away. You know, it's, what do you produce? Well, if you're bringing peace in a world that really doesn't have a desire for peace. If you're bringing healing, and you're, you know, without a doctor, my goodness, by speaking it, you're bringing healing, or by speaking, you're bringing people's hearts into account, whether they're actually being looking inward and they're saying, you know, I'd kind of like to be like him. Then, although we know that Christ gave his own life, he laid his life down. Those that were in power sought to kill him. So it's what are you bringing? What are you doing? Are you flipping this apple cart over? And if you are, who's the decider to say whether or not you should live or die? And we both know the answer to that.
Right.
You know, it's and it goes back to what you said you really didn't want to get into. So I can't go there either. But all of this,
it does have a momentum. It does have a momentum, and you think of moments to sort of what you're speaking to. What do we value? And you know, that's a big discussion. And sure, there should be rules in society and laws and things like that. But I am more of the mind that anarchy with a night watchman is not a bad idea. Everyone should be left alone, but then their taste should be cultivated, like Hayek mentions in The Road to Serfdom, chapter 10, versus what Bernays says in The Engineering of Consent, where he says, you know, even if, you know, people are stupid, so we have to re-educate them. But even if we had the best schools ever known to man, we'd still have to propagandize them. I'm not of that opinion. And so there is a momentum to it all. And who decides what's valuable in society? And you end up again, this is the reason that I advocate strongly everyone read Hayek's Road to Serfdom, because the planners, who's planning? Who's deciding? And you see the sort of connection between George Bernard Shaw when he writes in Man and Superman in 1903, the reasonable man adapts himself to the world. And this is a flipping, an inverting of reality. But, you know, the reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. That's a logical fallacy that bad guys use to justify their nonsense. And so he would fancy him.
One more thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but one more thing, because I've got to go really quick.
Okay.
I have to address the whole marriage license thing. I am neither a libertarian, a Democrat, a Republican, or anything else. I am who I am. I want to treat people the way I want to be treated. My problem with the marriage license, personally, I believe it is a covenant between a God and between a man and a woman, and the government has no business in it. Now, Paul did say that the marriage license was instituted basically because they didn't want blacks marrying whites. They didn't want incest. They didn't want this. They didn't want that. I have news for Paul and anyone else listening. The marriage license doesn't do anything to stop incest. It doesn't do anything to stop any of it. I picture in the garden when God created Eve and he brought her to Adam and he woke them both up and he said, you know, I've got this woman for you, Adam. And this is John's Michigander, Tennessean, you know, whatever you want to call it, interpretation of Genesis. Well, wait a minute, Adam, I'll be right back. I left the marriage license in my office. And by the way, while I'm gone, go find me $3 because you can't, this woman that I created just for you, you can't know until you pay the fee and I file the proper paperwork and you have your blood test. So what business is it of the government to be involved in marriage unless very ones that are going to say, yes, you can marry your wife. No, you can't marry your wife. That same man, and I'm sorry if it sounds mean, is telling Jim and Bob and Susan and Diane, yes, you may. And they have the audacity to say, no, you may not, John. No, you may not, John's wife. You can't do that. Yes, you can. No, you can have children. No, you can't. I mean, it is absolute. Right. Asininity, and I made up a word. It's asinine to think that the government has any business in marriage at all. That's why I'm against a marriage license. Now, I did tell my wife, maybe if I had it to do over again, we wouldn't have a license. She said, well, how do you know I would have married you? And my response was, well, either you would or you wouldn't. But at this point, if I had it to do over again, the government wouldn't be involved in my marriage. And there'd be as little involvement from them in my life as possible. But that comes with age. Anyway, I hope I made some kind of sense. And again, I wasn't saying what I was saying to be mean towards Paul. I like Paul. I learned from Paul. And I'll leave it at that.
Right on.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it, as always. So again, you know, George Bernard Shaw, the reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man, the decider, the planner, you know? And so again, Hayek addresses the moral dilemmas that arise when we start trying to plan the lives of others. And, you know, again, I think of Reagan, 1964, time for choosing on the Goldwater presidential campaign trail. This is the issue, whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite and far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. Do the philosopher kings decide better than we decide for ourselves? And again, it's a logical fallacy. No one will ever have a more vested interest in your success and a fiduciary obligation to it, so to speak, than you. No one has a more vested interest in my success than I, and a fiduciary obligation to it than I. And when we start drifting away from that concept is when we start becoming irresponsible and wards of the state, and maybe the nanny state is best, and maybe the state should raise children, and maybe the school should be a low level, you know, like a minimum security prison, because everyone, you know, it's a society of idiots, and little idiots grow up to be big idiots and have little idiots, and it's a vicious cycle. Maybe we should stop doing that. Maybe we should all become personally responsible for ourselves and raise our own children. And Hayek addresses this issue of the planners, particularly, I would say, in Chapter 2, The Great Utopia, even though the issue of planning is addressed throughout The Road to Serfdom. Chapter 5, Planning and Democracy. Chapter 6, Planning and the Rule of Law. Chapter 4, The Inevitability of Planning. Though Chapter 2 is not titled Planning in any way, it addresses this issue, the planners. And again, he mentions that, you know, the French writers who laid the foundations of modern socialism had no doubt about their idea that their ideas could be put into practice only by strong dictatorial government. I'm sure George Bernard Shaw would approve. To them, socialism meant an attempt, you mean like the Fabian socialists? An attempt to terminate the revolution, the Marxist communist revolution, workers of the world unite, by a deliberate reorganization of society on hierarchical lines, who decides, and by the imposition of a coercive spiritual power. Coercive. It's what Hillary Clinton likes to call smart power. It's better than hard power and soft power. It's a combination. It's, you know, it's a, you know, it's a gun barrel hidden in a brownie. Here, you want this brownie? No, take it, really. Where freedom was concerned, the founders of socialism made no bones about their intentions. Freedom of thought they regarded as the root evil of 19th century society. And the first of modern planners, St. Simon, even predicted that those who did not obey his proposed planning boards would be treated as cattle. So you go from there, you fast forward to George Bernard Shaw. What else did he say? Again, he wrote in The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism, speaking of the socialists, I also made it clear that socialism means, and this is the issue, it always comes down to this, you know, always comes down to this. I also made it clear that socialism means equality of income or nothing, and that under socialism, you would not be allowed to be poor. What? You would be forcibly fed, clothed, lodged, taught, and employed, whether you liked it or not. You know, that sounds like something I've heard of. People making license plates. Where do they do that? Gosh, I just can't remember. If it were discovered, by whom? Again, who decides? If it were discovered, see the ambiguity? Who's playing God here? Man does not play God well. It always ends badly. If it were discovered that you had not the character and industry enough, should I read it like George Bernard Shaw would say it? If it were discovered that you had not the character, anyway, an industry enough to be worth all this trouble, you might possibly be executed in a kindly manner. Really? Someone could actually think that and write that? You would be executed in a kindly manner. Why don't we start with you, George Bernard Shaw? How about we start with you? We'll execute you in a kindly manner. What an just psychopathic oxymoron. But whilst you were permitted to live, again, by whom, you would have to live well. Where is room for the individual? Oh, no, we don't want that. Now, this ideology is inseparable, this tyrannical, abusive, monstrous ideology is inseparable. Indeed, it is, you know, it's from the same fabric. It's the same family of thought as eugenics. And it is a downward spiral. It's an addiction that feeds on itself. You just can't kill enough people to seem to make society perfect. Why? Because people are imperfect. We're all – that's, again, getting back to the Bible. The Bible tells us we're all sinners by nature, saved by grace through faith if we're fortunate enough. But this idea that technocrats think that we can perfect society, create a utopia by, you know, just killing enough people, euthanizing, killing people in a kindly enough manner, it can't happen. It never works. Never has, never will. Can't kill enough people to make people perfect. And so it's ironic. The reason I mentioned Genesis 9, verse 7, you know, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, is the command that was reissued after the flood, was issued before and reissued after, is because that's the sort of antithesis. It's the antidote to all of this awfulness. And if you've had a child, you know what I'm talking about. Before you have a child, I mean, I can speak for myself. Again, before my child was born, I thought, who would be cruel enough to bring a child into this awful place? Then you have a child and you look basically at the face of God, so to speak. You look at a little slice of heaven, came into the world, and you, I thought to myself, oh, okay, I get it. This is why the world's not a darker place. This is a little slice of heaven, a little light to the world sent from heaven. And this is the reason things are not worse. And so as you start getting rid of that, you start shutting the light of the world out, so to speak. It has a momentum to it. Hopefully that makes sense. Back to the phones. Dave, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hey, Chris. How are you doing today? Dave.
You know, not too bad, all things considered.
Yeah, all things considered. Hey, I thought it was rather interesting you was talking about marriage there. I've taken a similar stance, but that this marriage license is ridiculous, and all you have to do is go back to the 1800s and take the Bible and write it in there, and you know, there's your marriage right there. There's a very clear explanation of this on Al Whitney's site. I know you mentioned her the other day. You listened to her program, and yeah. A guy went in to the marriage license office and asked him what it was about. And they describe it very well. I don't want to try to describe it, but it's clearly a contract between two people in the state where the state is the principal in the contract. Right. It's absurd.
And again, churches just that go gets after into this all of those and, nuances. Like you said, that gets into, you know, I call it magician's scarf. You pull on one square and suddenly another comes out, and then another and another and another. We could go down that rabbit hole. We could start talking about birth certificates and how everyone becomes a ward and property of the state, but the state.
I'm just talking about this.
Anyway, yeah,
I'm just talking about this because, the prior caller said, you know, that he doesn't like to have to get permission from the state for this and that. You don't have to. Just don't do it. It was a choice you made to go get the marriage license. He didn't know what it was
about. But again, that was the context there was John was referring to Paul's call earlier. So he's not saying that he wants to do that or he would advocate that. But yeah, just to clarify.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't hear Paul's call, and I'm not familiar with him. So there's two things I called about, actually. One was creation and entropy, and the other was the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Which one would you like me to talk about first?
Your choice. Have at it.
Okay. Creation and entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. I have a scientific background, so I know something about it. But I think to say that because the law of thermodynamics proves that creation couldn't have occurred spontaneously, I think that is false for this reason, that although we observe entropy as active right now, that law may not have been active when creation occurred. I mean, this is a possibility. And if that was the case, then things may be different than what we think. So
sure, but logic would also dictate, if that's the case, then the conditions that we presume and attribute to the creation were probably also different. So that, you know, you can't pick up one end of that stick without picking up the other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have to pick up both ends of that stick. You can't say that they're different now and base an argument back then on different conditions. You have to pick up both ends of the stick. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has...
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you, and in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. It's interesting, you know, when we start talking evolution, to me it's just another example of man trying to explain away God, basically. To try to say that maybe the conditions of that underlie the second law of thermodynamics were not present at some point must also carry with it the implications of applying the same thinking to whatever argument one makes for conditions that we weren't able to observe. I'm talking about, you know, when nothing exploded into something, for example. So to leave that presumption and to go make an argument and to conveniently use the argument, you know, pick up one end of the stick and not the other is what I believe is I think that's called a propositional fallacy. So I'm not saying that you're doing that, Dave. I'm saying that people that would do that, that is, I believe, a propositional fallacy.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is a logical fallacy, which people don't think about, is to presume that the law of entropy was active at the time that creation occurred.
Well,
and that's something we can't verify.
I agree, but I think, again, I think the Bible speaks to that, and I'm of the opinion that things were different in the garden, actually, and this present fallen condition is the de facto and not the de jure state of things, if you will.
Right.
But again,
yeah,
that sort
very
of...
well could be. And, you know, there's a, you know, we're very tempted to think that when sin entered the world, that entropy entered the world as well. But I can't say that for sure. So, but that's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. The whole point that when there's this creation evolution debate, what I see out of it is it's a historical fact. It's not a scientific question, and you can propose a creation according to a 7-day or some eons biblical, in a biblical way, or in a evolutionary species to species interconversion. You can propose that, but it's a historical question. So, what's the evidence to prove a historical event? Maybe being there, eyewitnesses. Other than that, I don't see a way to really prove exactly what happened. And so that it's a historical question, I think, is the key thing that I'm trying to emphasize that people think about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I don't know how it was done. I don't know if it was, you know, 6 literal days or if it was 6 eons. And I think there's a physicist from MIT who gave a very interesting talk about time and 7 ages being sequentially shorter and shorter. And the first age was very long. And I think there's a lot of evidence to say that things are older than this 4,000-year BC usher dating used for the Bible. So,
yeah, and again,
leaves me to,
you know,
wonder what happened.
Yeah, I think there's just, you know, you get into so much controversy. Again, I mean, the issue of nuance, and it's just, it's interesting to me that there's always this, it seems like the discussion carries with it, for those that want to try to make cases, we start to get out in front of science. Instead of proving a hypothesis, we're trying to make a hypothesis and see if it's true. We're trying to validate something. We're trying to find reasons to support something. And
it's pulpit pounding on a dogma that no one knows whether it's right or wrong. And if you're not part of the club, then you're rejected on either side of creation or evolution debate. I mean, I think this is very clear what happens.
Yeah.
So, that's all I have to say about that issue.
Right on. Well, I appreciate your call. Thanks. Thanks, Dave. What I mean when I say nuances in this case is, you know, the science behind the dating, for example. One of the provocative recent discoveries is that time is not a constant, E equals MC squared, or the, you know, speed of light, excuse me. And it appears to be slowing down. And what are the implications of the dating technology if time is slowing down, or if speed of light is slowing down? Anyway, well, maybe I'll clarify and we'll go back to the phones when we come back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Welcome back. So, you know, these nuances, they're curious things. The discussion of dating, for example, you know, dating systems like carbon dating, a recent discovery, the speed of light is apparently slowing down. So you think of E equals MC squared, right? And the speed of light is not a constant, apparently. If it's slowing down, what are the implications? And in a simple, crude analogy, you think about a trip like from Washington State to Florida. And if I travel 100 miles an hour from Washington to the Florida border, and I slow down to 35, and from the border to your house in Florida, I'm traveling 35. If you base my trip on 35 miles an hour, you would think it took me a lot longer to get there than it did. And so, you know, it's funny how that discussion seems to support the biblical view of entropy, so to speak, and also supports what I said about how things were indeed different. You know, this present fallen condition is the de facto, not the de jure, so to speak. And things were different before Adam and Eve were escorted out of the garden by the, cherub with the fire sword was stationed there at the entrance guarding the tree of life. And it's just funny, again, how we're always trying to assuage these discussions, trying to find evidence and reasons, you know, to shuffle God away. It's curious how that happens. Kind of like we're trying to explain away other things that can't be made sense of in any other way. What happened, you know, in Florida, you know, Nicholas Cruz was, hey, what, you know, there are a lot of funny things that happened in Broward County over the last 20 years. We'll say in particular, even before the 9/11 era, I've pointed out the Sun Sentinel runs article after article about folks at the Darul Uloom Institute in Pembroke Pines who have been suborned by the FBI. And, you know, like all of these other instances, like what Trevor Aronson is talking about, how this FBI strategy is actually creating U.S.-based terrorists. The FBI is responsible for more terrorism plots in the United States than any other organization. And speaking of Broward County, some kid in Alaska working a $10 an hour job goes to the FBI office, says the CIA is trying to get me to fight for ISIS. FBI says, nope, ship shape. Next month, the kid is flying from Alaska down through Minneapolis down to Hollywood Airport in Broward County and empties a clip and lays spread eagle on the ground. That's weird. Maybe this kid, Nicholas Cruz, who his, you know, adoptive family said, the Sneed family said he could not run a microwave. Kid can't tie his shoes, but he masterminds some Jason Bourne, you know, style. Who can create a plot like that? The intelligence community? No, it's not that. It can't be that. Maybe the FBI and CIA, maybe there's some kind of, you know, what's his name? Kofor Black and Enrique Rick Prado teaming up to create these this farm of assets that can't be traced back to intelligence agencies, CIA trying to get people to do things, FBI, COINTELPRO, Trevor Aronson, based on research in the post 9/11 era, the FBI responsible for more terrorism plots in the United States than any other organization, more than all others combined. No, it can't be that. Nicholas Cruz just had a moment of brilliance, even though the voices in his head told him to call Uber. No, it can't be that. It has to be something else. It's just funny how we're trying to explain away things that make perfect sense in a specific context, but no sense in these other contrived contexts. Yet we still want to reach for those. Why do you suppose that is? I ask rhetorically. Back to the phones. Glenn in Philly. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris.
Glenn.
You may find this amusing, refreshing. Okay. What is the empirically qualifiable and quantifiable force or phenomenon in nature that is in opposition to entropy?
I can't say. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Biological life.
Biological what?
Biological life. Biological life.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's inanimate objects are fully subject to entropy. But biological life and the order within it flies in the face of entropy. You have, you know, things ordering themselves. You have injured things healing themselves. You have things, you know, constructing and reconstructing and stuff in biological life.
And it's interesting to sort of make that contrast or the distinction even greater in – again, in man's infinite wisdom, everything that we build, you know, we're finally this far into the technological revolution, so to speak, for thousands of years, I mean. And now we can make a computer that can sort of write its own code. But, you know, if man walks away, trees will grow, grass will grow, birds will flourish and things all by themselves. But anything man builds requires constant effort, to your point.
Right. And even biological life does not completely rescind entropy. I mean, biological life over the long term is subject to morbidity and mortality.
Sure.
There are things that so but along the way, I mean, if I were to have a spinal cord injury, that may not heal and I could be a quadriplegic. However, when I cut my finger the other day, that little half inch gash is healing quite nicely. So it's not complete, but it clearly militates against entropy.
Yeah,
and Gnostics love entropy because they hate the material world. you know, they think the material world is evil. So, you know, it's interesting. Judaism, in stark contrast to Gnosticism, is very affirming of the material realm, because actually to a fault, because that's one of the problems with modern Judaism that isn't looking at, you know, Talmudic Judaism and stuff like that, that sees everything as being about what transpires here on earth and material realm and stuff like that, you know. So
I think that comes back to like 1 Corinthians 1 and Romans 11:25 and stuff like that. There's a context to that. Again, it's the nuance, you know. Those people, there's a particular proclivity for a period of time, I think summed up in Romans 11:25. Anyway, not to get off on that discussion, but yeah, well, I agree with what you're saying.
You have the distinction between the spirit and the flesh lusts against spirit against the flesh. You push that too far and you can, you know, venture into Gnostic territory, but clearly, and then of course, and we've had that for, you know, we have people claiming that Christianity is, you know, Gnostic or has strong elements of Gnosticism, Elaine Pagels and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But clearly, Christianity is very Jewish. We have a, you know, Jewish Messiah, and you know, clearly affirming of the creation and the material realm. It's just that, you know, again, the effects of sin have passed upon the whole, you know, creation. So you know, some we'll never know, you know, exactly what things were like or in the garden or, you know, something like that. But certainly, you certainly hear guys like Missler, or, you know, a physicist and stuff talking about this relationship of entropy. One thing we know, at age 58, I know my body is sorely subject to entropy at the moment, you know, and things start going downhill. And, you know, we're in a downward, more morbid spiral towards that. And I think, I sort of think God gives us, does that, like we have time to realize our mortality, our feebleness, our vulnerability, you know, and, you know, on our way down. I think a great many people said, oh, I was really arrogant in my youth. Now I'm being mm-hmm. humbled by all of my limitations on my way down. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that shooter didn't empty a clip. He emptied the magazine. clips are only for auto rifles and mm-hmm. and they usually use magazines, but you know, if
I was being facetious, but yeah, absolutely. Good point.
Let's see. What else is it? Oh, on the marriage thing, real quick. It's interesting that the one fellow talked about, the caller, I think from Tennessee, talked about God with Adam and Eve. Well, clearly, you know, the covenant was pretty directly administered by the authority in that case. But if you look at how religions, organized religions, became the stewards of the marital covenant, you know, so specifically Judaism, I mean, we had arranged marriages and stuff like that. I mean, even as recently, if you look at the musical, Broadway musical, Fiddler on the Roof, you know, you still had the little village in Russia had the town Yenta. The word Yenta is, you know, come to mean a matchmaker. You know, they had matchmakers and they were doing arranged marriages just, you know, pre-Bolshevik Revolution, you know, right where when that musical was set. And so, you know, so the organized religions within the communities oversaw it, but it was still a matter of covenant. You know, and it was administered by the religion. But one interesting thing is, I mean, if a Christian couple today wanted to be married in a church but not have a state marriage license, they would refuse to marry them. They would require, you know these 501c3 churches are semi-wedded to the state, and they're not going to perform a church wedding without a state marriage license.
I think generous.
Yeah, they're not going to. I wonder how it works with the Amish, but I suspect, as the one caller talked about, you know, they will appeal to health interests and stuff like that. It used to be, and the thing is, people could simply cohabit without submitting to the marriage, you know, to being married. There used to be laws against that, and one could get in trouble with the law for cohabiting without being married. Nowadays, it's a very common sort sort of
thing. Well, that's an interesting, again, nuanced definition of terms, the adulteration of language, particularly in the post-truth American era or United States era, if you will. And the – I mean, there's just so much. The – you know, as far as the issue of marriage, I don't think – you know, I don't know. There's just – there's so much and so little time now. Anyway.
Well, it's clearly – well, if Christians or Jews of good conscience, I don't bother trying to speak for – Hindus or Buddhists or Shintos or atheists or whatever, but if Christians want to be married, you know, then they want, you know, in the Bible, you know, they want this marriage to be sanctioned by God. So Christians clearly agree with marriage. And I always think it's interesting the distinction in sexual activity in the Bible between a man laying with a woman versus knowing his wife. You know, then they both connote sexual coitus, but one indicates, you know, the two become one flesh, they're in covenant, and a husband doesn't merely lay with his wife, he knows his wife. And I think that's interesting because this idea of people knowing each other and being a big part of marriage is working well together. I will make a meet for him. I'll make a worthy helper. You know, couples are supposed to, you know, they're one flesh, they're not one soul, they're not one spirit, and they're supposed to be living so as to be synergistically producing the synergy required in helping one another to facilitate having kids, because it pretty much takes synergy to
which sort of echoes what I was saying earlier, yeah. On the issue of Jewish Christians and Jewish people, who is a Jew in general? Paul, Romans 2 and Romans 9. And on the issue of cohabitating, I'll say this. I mean, again, it's there's so much to unpack, but it's interesting. Again, where did marriage come from, and all of this, you know, the state sanctioned stuff, religion, the discussion of a state religion, and all of that. I mean, how far back do we go? Do we go back to the Council of Nicaea? Do we go back to the Constantinian era? The cohabitating, it's, you know, things that come to my mind that the etymology of the word concubine is interesting in this sort of context. The issue of marriage, the Samaritan woman at the well in John 4, and that conversation.
You've had five husbands, and the man with whom you presently live is not your husband.
Right. Right. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack, and the bottom line is the state really has no business in the business of marriage, which is not a business.
Right.
It's a covenant between the three parties are God, man, and woman. And there's union, and the state doesn't belong in that covenant.
Well,
that's my view. So,
once the union is formed, there aren't too many things in the Old Testament, you know, in the Bible, which God says he hates. But one of the I hate statements of God is, I hate divorce. So,
right.
You know, it's a covenant. God doesn't like covenant breaking, and he hates divorce. You know, so, and I heard Alan Dershowitz on Newsmax TV one time excoriating modern Christianity for being tolerant of remarriage after divorce, because he points out that, you know, Christianity has the most stringent standard, you know, like he's talking about the New Testament. This is Alan Dershowitz, the Jewish ACLU professor from Harvard, and saying how Christians want to be so legalistic about abortion. I think it was USOS and the state control for abortion. Yet they themselves contradict their own rules about divorce all the time.
And hopefully he's as concerned about being found in Jeffrey Epstein's little black book as he is about those kinds of things. Anyway.
It's not, I shouldn't laugh. It's sad, but true. But, you know. But then again, people's names can also be put in places like that to smear them. You know.
Yeah, but I think my point is, you know, we're not supposed to throw stones in glass houses. And I'm guessing that he probably has a plank in his own eye, perhaps in his closet somewhere, that you know, that he's pointing at people with toothpicks in theirs. Maybe, you know, he shouldn't be doing that. Anyway.
Yeah, possible.
That's just my conjecture.
Right. Well, he would say this. Well, it's not my, yes, but I'm not being as much of a hipster or whatever. I have no idea what the situation. But certainly, let's face it, everybody in Christianity wrestles with this concept of divorce, you know, not divorcing except for the cause of adultery. And then, you know, basically, he who, you know, Jesus himself says that he who divorces his wife makes her adulteress, and he who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. I mean, he's clearly, man, that's pretty stringent. And yet everybody has to tap dance, all the pastors, and, you know, all pastors and priests have to tap dance around that when they start talking about issues like physical abuse, sexual abuse, other justifications for divorce and remarriage, you know. It's one issue in the New Testament that I wish were a little clearer.
I think it is pretty clear. I think it is pretty clear. I think it's, you know, again, really pretty simple. Jesus summing up the, which is the greatest commandment, Matthew 22, the golden rule, Matthew 7:12. It's there. Yeah. And if we're operating on that basis, then,
It does make remarriage for rather difficult, you know,
the point I was going to make is if you're operating on that basis, if you're operating on the Matthew 22, Matthew 7:12 basis, and you have some kind of confusion about, you know, how this issue works in the context we're speaking, then you go back to Hosea and everything's made clear for those who don't know, maybe read it.
Well, yeah, Hosea, of course, being the metaphor of God himself being married to a prostitute. And then, you know, we see Hosea waiting and waiting. He gives her Gomer's owner money to take care of her. And it's not until she's naked and back up on the slave sales block again, that he's able to purchase her back and redeem her. It's talk about a story of unrequited love and devotion. Yeah. Oh, brother.
Yeah. Yep. And when we really start to get our minds around things, you know, we as in, I don't know, the folks, Bible-believing folks, shall I say, then you start to realize the sobering reality of Romans 5:8, for example. God demonstrates his love in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And James, talking about religion in chapter 1, 26 and 27, it's a very profound, sobering, and humbling reality to be reminded that, you know, it's not a free gift. It's free to me, it's free to you, but it was not free. In fact, the one who paid the price was sweating blood, saying, "Father, if it's possible for this cup to pass from me, let it pass, but not my will, yours." That's pretty expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not your own, you're bought with a price. Not, it wasn't free. Freedom, you know. Freedom,
but not the pearl of great price. In the, you know, the, what do you call it? The dogmatic sort of fashion. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I guess that's all I have.
Right on.
I guess I'll go and finish feeding cats.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it, as always. Back to the phones in the interest of time. Scott in California? No. Yes? Scott in California. You have Scott? Yes? No? Huh. Okay. Scott, you there?
It's up Fred in Michigan.
Fred in Michigan. Thanks for calling. Welcome. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking of you earlier. So, welcome. Wondering what you're up to.
Sorry I didn't awake from my slumber earlier. I'm sure you've had a lively cast today. I was scrutinizing YouTube and came upon a thing called One Nation Underwater, Global Commercial Code Admiralty Law. And I hear, coincidentally, some people alluding to what is inextricably maritime admiralty law relative to the birth record and marriage license, et cetera.
And Revelation 18 and all of that fun stuff. 13 and 18 combined, maybe.
Yeah, all right. So I'm not a Bible scholar guy. I try to track things down, and I started doing this, Chris, in about 97. So I contacted State of Michigan Senator, and I demanded a meeting, and which never happened because I was told that not only would I ever be in possession of my original birth record, I wouldn't even be allowed to see it. All right.
Yeah, so, I've had some curious discussions too. I think it was a county, I want to say auditor, who I was with two other folks. This is about 10 years ago, and we asked, you know, do you understand the duality of your office? And he said yes, and we all kind of looked at each other dumbfounded. Wow, really?
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Well. And now I know, Chris, that there is no statutory mandate to record or register one's private land deed. And when you do, you surrender, forfeit, waive, convey the monetary, economic, fiduciary, controlling rights and interests. And that's considered a privilege. And there's a tax, privilege tax, attached to that. But
right.
What they never disclose, Chris, is the fact that they issue bonds, they engage in commerce, profiteering, with no disclosure, no informed consent authorization. So I'm going to take them to task in the near future on that. But when you have time, check out this presentation, One Nation Underwater, Global Commercial Code on YouTube. I'd really like to get your input on that.
Right on.
All right, bro. Thanks.
I made a note. Thanks, Fred. Scott, Keith, if we missed you guys, my apologies. Lloyd and Jeff, sorry we missed you guys earlier. I hope it was informative. Interesting day. You know, 1 Timothy 1, Titus chapter 3, these, you know, questions and genealogies, these silly discussions, we shouldn't get off on those. Not saying we did today. I'm just, you know, I'm mindful of that. And I hope we have intelligent discussions that raise the bar on this broadcast. I hope we do. And so anyway, my humble thanks for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Oh. Happy Kwanzaa, everyone. This is National Bugle Radio. And this is the... We're actually talking on the first day of Kwanzaa, which, for those of you not...